visualize the infinity of the universe.
Yeah.
You want to hook it up?
Well, he's under construction.
This makes a much better recording.
Yeah. So the pig says to the lama, teach me how to find tranquility, inner tranquility. So the lama says, assume the yoga posture. And then close your eyes and try to visualize the universe and the infinity of the universe. Well, the pig sat down and closed his eyes, and after a while, he says, how are you doing? He says, well, all is happening, I'm not getting any... Then tranquility, he says, after getting the instructions, this was the remark the pig made. Is that all I got to do, you know? Sit down, close my eyes, is that this what I have to do? Is that how I'm going to get this tranquility? Shut my eyes and visualize, huh? So the lama says, yes. So how are you doing, you know? I ain't seen anything. All I can think of is New Year's Eve. And parties. That's all the pig can see in his mind. So the lama picked up a mallet and hit him in the head and knocked him out cold. When he hit him in the head, he saw all the stars of the universe and he saw all the lights of the universe. And then the lama says, some people are hard to tranquilize inside. Sometimes I hit him hard in the head. But that's a very true thing with most of us when we start meditating. The mind. This is normal, it's nothing new.
Yeah, but you know, so many times it happens that we, I mean, people would say, well, I'm resigned to God's will. And then we end up doing things which, under that God sometimes, that it's God's will I'm doing, and
how is that?
Draw the line and
right.
Get the kind of distinction probably with as you grow, you get
the distinction. Well, you see, it's not, for instance, I said, Divine Mother willing, this is the thing, not my will, because I can come back my own will. Now, I meditate, but I never ask Divine Mother where I should go, what I should do. Because the first thing the scriptures of all religions point out, do not pray like the Gentiles, like the gentle folk, those who have no understanding. You see? Now, the uninformed, do not pray like the uninformed who is praying for things. Now, learn to pray by seeking first the kingdom of God which is within you, and all these things will be added unto you. That is, try to sit down and gather in meditational practice. Oh, thank you. And gather in this eye, this consciousness, and let it calm you down. Thank you.
Looks like I'm on the car.
Wouldn't you know when I get ready to go somewhere?
Yeah, sure. I wish this happened for a time. Thank you for asking.
It's all right. I'm glad it happened this way. I'm just real thrilled.
Yeah.
Oops. Good. Hey,
yeah.
Who do got food?
No.
I'm not giving.
You don't ask for yourself. Because this is normal, we do these things before we come into the meditative life. This is normal for us to do that. After we get in the meditative life, We're trying to feel ourselves through the actions around us, through the things that are synchronizing our life. We says, well, this is God's will or my will, which is which? God's will is so well organized that when the experience comes along and you get involved, the information that is being brought out, you see why it is God's will that you have to be there at that particular time for that particular experience. Otherwise, it is not there. And the scripture says, your needs are fulfilled, not the wants. And this is a lesson we got to learn to live with. This is something we have to learn to live. This is a natural process. As we learn to live with the need, then that doesn't say we don't develop our abilities. That doesn't say we mustn't develop our artistic nature, our talents, because this is a evolution. We have to gather this consciousness and work with it. But meditation is to help you to go to these things with a better sense of attitude, a different frame of mind, not as a sort of a defeatist attitude. Always think, if you're fortunate to be the one little sperm that became a human being, you're going to be fortunate enough to make the grade with what you attempt to do. Because this is already implanted in the sperm, in the very genes, for success. Now, if you defeat that, then you're destroying the very life principle in yourself. That's why the Master says the worst thing for a spiritual person is doubt. They wouldn't condemn any other behavior pattern in a person. But the one particular thing that they have tremendous, they don't want to see in a person, is a sense of doubt. If you don't believe, all right, but don't doubt. They barely say, I don't believe, but don't doubt. You see? Don't doubt that you can, that these things can happen. Better say, I don't believe in it. But to say, I doubt these things do exist, you know, then doubt already sets up a sort of defeated attitude in the individual.
This building of faith, I mean, it should be not only don't have doubt, but continue to build up a stronger and stronger belief or a faith in the inherent, whatever you call it, beingness of your nature or of God. Because it is in the measure of your faith that anything is done unto you, or that anything is that happens.
Well, you see, in this way, how you increase your successive abilities, or what you say, the spiritual forces that warrant you to be at the right place for the right experience, is by recognizing the actual fact of success by becoming a human being. If you do not recognize this fact, this physical fact of having succeeded to become a human being, then this sense of success don't exist for you. The sense of failure exists for you. You see? The Jewish people are very, very success-minded, but their sense of success is because they have accepted the fact that they have achieved human birth. They have achieved, they will overcome. And in yoga, this is the first thing. Martin Luther's banner talk, you know, he will overcome. But he's not saying he's overcome because he knew that he succeeded in being to become a human being from the sperm. The yogis know this. Therefore, there is no impossible thing for a spiritual master. He bases his power to overcome karma or the laws of nature where other men fail. He bases it on the actual fact that he became a human being over all the teeming masses that were struggling to get to that over. He was the one that made it. So the one that made it is the one that has a sense of strength. You see?
He knows he's on the fire, he's got started.
Right, because the path is this, life and death, and life and accomplishment of becoming human form, taking on human form and working with as a God principle. Look how many are discarded. If you look at through a microscope,
yeah,
and you see. So the one that did succeed was the one that is what you say, chosen. No, Brahma has chosen. No, Abraham says, I have chosen these people. These are the chosen people of God. All right, look at it in a different context. The creative intelligence has chosen to intercede for the one sperm to succeed. So they say in the scriptures, happy is the man who has gained human birth, for it is the will of God and his grace that made it possible. Well, we don't understand how that, we read it as poetry. Now let us read it as objective science and as religion and see how it is true. The sperm was the thing that did it. The motility of that, the action, that drive, that will, the Peter. Then the John, the devotion of having come out now as human form to realize yourself. You see the symbols, are they ready? Bring out the nature of you. You realize now why you have to succeed, why you do succeed. In spite of yourself, you want to succeed. In other words,
you've already succeeded.
Right. Once you haven't bitten by the bug of success or accomplishment, this successful accomplishment, but when you defeat it by feeling that you're not succeeded, then you are weakening the thing. You are weakening this principle.
There is no striving then from then on, once there is a realization that I am soul. There is only there's only a being each day.
Yeah.
But that realization
is much more than a mental
acceptance. Mm-hmm. Yes, but... I've mentally accepted that a long, long time ago.
Well, see...
I'm still... Now I'm not even on the path, I'm just climbing the ladder.
Well, look at it this way. You can only see the growth in others, you cannot see it in yourself. It's very hard to see the growth in yourself. Why? Because the sense of unworthiness creeps in because you are flesh. You are form. Therefore, the sense of unworthiness
comes from?
No.
Well, if you think
if you realize that you are worthy, well, wait a minute. Until you accept worthiness as divine grace, permitting you to be a human being, not until you accept this fact that it was the divine grace that permitted you to be a human being, to be the only sperm to succeed, then is worthiness a real thing for you? That you are worthy for everything that cometh your way. It's your worth. You are worth it. You're entitled to it. I have a friend, you know, he calls himself a Jewish Texan. He says, I am entitled to be a Texan because I was born in Israel.
No, that's real thinking.
And he came from Israel, born in Israel, he lives in Texas. He says, I'm entitled to be a Texan.
Well, it also helps us to recognize the worthiness of every other person.
Right.
Amazing God, too. I'm getting more.
Now you understand what they say, to love neighbor as self. You cannot love neighbor as self in the true sense of the word unless you accept the worthiness of self. Where is the worthiness of self? If you constantly defeat yourself of being worthy of being a being, or being a channel or an expression of God, then you have defeated your neighbor too. Okay? You first got to evaluate your own worth. You got to evaluate your own worth, that you are worthy to have the grace of light to descend and make you succeed at this critical point of truth, which is the sperm into human form, into God form.
Well, when you say succeed, what are you trying to succeed at? What are you trying to be worthy of other than...
God seeks within himself to achieve the full realization or express himself as full realization in human form. That's why he slowed down or created human form, in order to worship himself. And so, he himself, this created intelligence, seeks to establish worthiness of his own self in form. Otherwise, what do we need a form? What does God need a form to worship himself? The form will never admit to itself that it is worthy of the divine intervention. Its ego will say, I am more important, but that's not worthiness. I am more superior, but that's not worthiness. The ego can be very puffed up, but the ego talking is self-pride. That's not worthiness. Yeah. You understand? Worthiness is a humility with not a sense of defeatism. There's no sense of being defeated when you think you're worthy of something or you're entitled to something. It is a sense of strength that permits you to apply yourself without any sense of doubt or backsliding.
Well, it's a complete realization of who you are, what you know that you are, say, God in manifestation. You wouldn't say that God was not worthy of succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to admit that you are.
Right, okay. You ask me, how much is this worth? So we say maybe 10 cents, 15 cents. We don't say it doesn't worth anything. It worth something. Right? Now, in human consciousness and in beingness, we are worth something too. No, we got to establish what is the something we are worth. Now, the more complicated, the more better material this object is made from, the greater is the worth. Now, in consciousness is the same thing. We place a higher worth or sense of value on the realized master's presence than on the person who is not realized. Don't we do that? Now, if two people come to work for you, don't you put a higher sense of value on the more experienced individual than the lesser? Why? Because it's the application of one to the other. The involvement of responsibility of one for the other. It's like the three men had three talents given to them. One had five, one had two, or whatever it is. And they all then thought and applied. Well, what did the third one do with this?
Yeah, he hid it.
He hid it. So what was it worth to him? Was there any worthiness in him? If he himself don't consider himself worthy enough to apply himself, the being who gave him or the person who gave him something, isn't it right for him to take it back from him? You're wasting the thing. In other words, whatever you are worth and whatever you estimate yourself, and the highest estimate you place on yourself is soul. You see? If you place yourself the highest estimate, it's not ego now, that you are soul, then you're going to realize it in this life form. The effort is not wasted. The effort is going to come more now. You're going to see it because every action that you perform now is will of God. Guru, through the Guru, from the contact with Gurus, you are doing their will, which is you are meditating to discover yourself. You're accepting the challenge. Now that doesn't say if somebody is sick you don't pray for them, but what is the will of God too in that person's life? The will of God is that man should lift himself up, but that man's karma may prevent him from lifting himself up or prevent
him. This brings up a question in my mind, Adal, and that is, of course it was brought on by this thing that we read that, in the book that Louise had over here the other night when Krishnamurti said something about people who go out, who go around trying to help are a curse. Sometimes I wonder if we don't seemingly interfere in trying to help another because the very thing that he has is really a result of his own actions, thought, or his own being misfiring somewhere. And how else can he learn except through the discomfort that's brought on through that? If you take away the thing that is giving him this discomfort, if you take it away too easily, will he ever begin to think in terms of what the cause is, or who he is, or what might have brought this on? I don't know whether I make myself clear or not, but it isn't that you don't want to be helpful to people, but in taking their problem away from them, have you really helped them?
Sometimes the greatest help is not to help.
Well, that's what I wondered.
And this is what they call the saints sometimes appear to be cold potatoes.
Yeah.
But they are not cold potatoes in the sense that they don't give no physical, tangible expression of help to satisfy the five senses or the ego. But they do help by re-evaluating themselves within you as themselves. They try to see themselves in you. Now when I look at you, I'm trying to see a dino, or my consciousness, I'm trying to see the consciousness of God. What is the God in mortal? It's the life power which is in me. Can I recognize this life, how it vibrates, how it scintillates, how it is text, what is coming out from it? Which is self, because this self is the audible life current. You see? Now, to say to you, do this, do that, this is only a mechanical action. It's like saying to myself, I should do this, I should do that. That's a mechanical action. But if I don't say anything, when I try to picture you in totalness, which is picturing myself in totalness too, then in totalness, or in oneness, I see myself as harmony. Then sooner or later, your mechanism starts to take on the sense of harmony.
And where there's harmony, there isn't going to be illness or anything else, because that is the outpicture of wholeness.
Then after you reap this harvest of harmony in yourself, you got to share it. You got to share it because you can't use it all yourself.
But, yeah, but how do you share it?
Only when you get to a certain degree of development or realization that you share this, you can pray for them, meditate for them, and turn the thing over to the masters.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You don't deliberately go out and interfere in their life or anything.
No, but then you see the masters also give you some of the workload to carry to you. You got to carry some of the workload. You don't force you into it right away. See, for instance, there was a king who was ill, son was ill, and he prayed that the illness go to him, and his son became well. That's a workload. And that's how they work out. Many masters work out the karma of friends or disciples in their bodies.
Okay.
To say to somebody, I'm helping you, this is duality too. It's a duality because you're not helping. By not saying anything, by saying I'll think of it or I'll meditate upon it, I'll pray on it. Now we have three ways to pray in which we can confuse ourselves. One, we pray that the person get well. But we are confused to the extent that they need to be well. And we are confused to the extent that we think all prayers are so important that the divine intelligence has got to intercede to make them well. You see the pride in the ego that crept in there? Right away, because we assume right away that all prayers are so important to create an issue in that, or intercede in that person's life. Now, this is the thing now. That's one approach that we have, that this is a weakness too. How do we step aside from that weakness? We meditate again in ourselves. Now we have to pass through that to recognize it, or we have to be exposed to it, otherwise we don't know that we have done that. We don't know we were victims of doing such a thing. We all have done it. Everyone has done it. They cannot exclude
it. But it is the actual experiencing the thing, though, that makes you wise enough to know or realize what it is.
Right, because after you've prayed many times that way, and you see the repercussions of having think you have helped, and then you really didn't help, then you take stock of yourself. Do I really help, or should I help? Or who help? Or what is being helped? If God has slowed down and become this person, and this person has a malfunction of thinking and is reaping the rewards of the malfunction of thinking, and turns to you, and you with we with both puffed up egos assume that this is gonna, our so-called spirituality is gonna correct this thing, we are big fools. We really ain't doing anything. You understand? We're deluding ourselves. The thing is, to say to the person, after we realize what is being involved, I will meditate on it. But don't say, I'm going to try and heal you. Or I'm going to ask God to heal you. You understand? Because then again, you think you have some kind of pull with this unseen force, which he doesn't think he has a pull. You understand? And then right away, he develops a sense of inferiority complex, and you develop the inferiority, or the superiority complex.
Which is the same thing.
Same thing. Now, if you say you'll meditate, you'll try to see within yourself the truth of the thing. Here I am, a self, pure energy. And that other person is pure energy. That other person is light, it's consciousness. And two things equal to the same thing are themselves equal to one another. Then how is it going to be possible for you not to love one another? If that is consciousness and that is light and that is energy, and your consciousness, you and they are both equal, you see the equality of the thing now? Both being equal and the same thing. Now, then, if you feel harmony, then you don't pray for harmony in that person. You harmonize consciousness with consciousness. You know in your consciousness that that person is functioning now. in harmony and in consciousness, because that person is consciousness and that person is of the same nature, the same substance, the same thing. So you're not interfering no more. You're not taking part or dictating. You are now synchronizing.
I'm maintaining a continuous thought of duality.
You're synchronizing. It's a sense of synchronization now. It's an acknowledgement with a thing. So that's why the centurion, when he came to Jesus, all of a sudden he realized, why should I invite this man? Why should I ask him to pray for my son? If you only say the word, you see? But if saying the word was something tangibly he needed to clear up in his mind the sense of oneness, and Jesus, seeing that, said, never in this whole land have I seen such faith. But go, it's all right, it's done. What is done? Did Jesus do something? Or it is done because the man has come to the realization that there is a oneness between him and all life, that his son is still himself, and he's the progenitor of his son, and God, all the whole, he sees it now, he sees the connecting link of all things, with the mere fact that he stopped asking the man to come to the house. You know, he woke up to the realization that the whole thing was oneness. This is taking place within the man finally. And because it's taking place within him finally, from that deeper realm of his nature, Jesus is affirming it. Jesus is sort of putting a sort of a sense of a confirmation to this, that understanding. It's done. It's done unto you that who realize now that the whole thing is a total oneness. That it's yourself who is being healed in the child. It is your real self. You only see him as a child because you were the father from a physical standpoint. Now you are seeing it not as a father because you stopped wanting to invite me into the house as a physical being. You stopped the process of delusion. You see? The mental block. You automatically recognize the mental block that this is not a child no more. This is self. And I am not a teacher coming now to be coming to the house to heal this man. This is self again talking. The man got an illumination, an enlightenment to self. The moment he recognized that he didn't have to go and ask the man to come in now. You know, when he met him, he says, my son, and Jesus would say, well, you don't go heal people who don't belong to his church, you know, or his nationality. But he says, if you only say the word, sir. But this is the enlightenment now. It's an enlightenment to oneness in self. And
this is also the enlightenment when you come into this realization that I am soul, not that I have one, but that I am soul. And being soul, I am one with the soul nature of the universe.
Yes. Now, feeling it, the thing is this, you have to feel.
Yeah.
See, once you start feeling, there is a pulling back from all the five senses, all through the nerves, from the leg, ears, and everything. There's a sense of pulling, the energy seems to pull back and stops in certain portion of your body. It stops right there, on the top of the skull and in the forehead. And you feel a sense of, like it's numb. In other words, all the energies have returned back to us, a fulcrum, a firing point. You understand? Which is the real you. When you close your eyes, you are pulling back into yourself. You're pulling back into the core of yourself. Now, the real core of yourself is not triggering off anything. The real core of yourself is devotion, which is the natural love. The natural love of being yourself. The natural love of sitting right where you are and being content. Now, this doesn't say that you sit down there and have no compassion or anything, not get involved in worldly activities. Yukteswar just knocked that out of Yogananda's head. Don't get drunk in this core of identity. Don't get drunk in this blissful feeling without partaking in material activity, because it's a world that is built that way. Only people who are made out of marble don't act. We're made out of flesh. We have to act. You see?
To act out that realization in all of living.
Well, the thing is, it is not running away or sitting down that solves the problem. It's getting inside first and feeling the strength from inside in order to go outside with. This is something that is different. It is something that takes a while to adjust to.
Well, you'd have to experience it little by little, I think,
yes,
to realize it. Mm-hmm.
Peace don't come like something and you suddenly transform. It is a gradual saturation of your cells. You know, the yogi or the spiritual man in this early part of his life, or the very start of his meditative life, begins to feel the presence of God or the divine spiritual force as a pressure around the neck and the head and the forehead and the temples, like I said, the pulsating. This is to give him indication or to make him aware of the fact that he is linked up now with the divine principles of his nature, and that he should be more aware and try not to break that link, not try to disturb the link, try to understand how it functions and try to live with it. Now Yogananda says, gradually as you learn to live with this vibration or this presence, you begin to do your daily duties with a sense of inner calmness. That's why the meditation is no good just to sit down and close the eyes and feel a little bliss. It is the best of it is to open the eyes and to try to take it. That's why they say, open your eyes, don't move, and try to hold on to this inner synchronization, or this inner synchronized peace, this inner contemplative condition, this inner softness, this inner strength, and walk out in the material realm or objective realm, taking it in strides. Now you apply yourself in art, music, anything. When you apply yourself, from that frame of reference, from that particular sense of attitude, that you are calm, collective, and you have deeper. Actors and actresses are forced more than normal people to react faster under those conditions. It takes a great deal of mental conditioning to shift from one emotional nature to another, let alone if you can have the devotional nature. You see, imagine Jerry Lewis playing a Roman priest. This guy should can be a comedian priest. But then if you can take on the serious nature, still it's gesture, mood and gesture, attitude again. See, the whole thing is still, the person has to condition himself and go in, he has to live the part. Now this is the thing, as I say, the living Bible is one little expression to live the part of the expressive thing. Spiritual person is no different than any other person. Only the idea was there, and 99% of it was perspiration.
Yeah, a little bit of idea with a lot of push.
You see, the more and more as you get into yourself, there are three distinct things that take place. One, the calmness, the tenderness, and the invisible strength of conviction. This is something you begin to realize sooner or later over the years of meditative life.
When you say strength, is that strength to fulfill, the strength of will?
No, not strength of will. Strength of acceptance. You accept yourself. Not strength to dominate or push out another. You are here. You are you. In other words, each one of us is a unique petal in the flower. Now, you know, the peculiar thing is this. The petal in the flower is connected to the next petal. You ever look at the flower before the petals separate? When the bud is closed up, when you go to open it, before you start tearing petal off from petal, there's a slight connecting link from one to the other.
From one petal to the other?
Yeah. There is a connection. That connection is the unity of our life frequency in all of us. We are all connected equally within to God. The sense of identity is the individual petal when it's pulled apart by the pressure of the air to express its own identity. And this is what we are when we seem to want to communicate our nature to others. It gives us a sense of identity. The moment you want to communicate to me, you disconnect from everything that you are connected to and you project you. But if you don't want to communicate to me, then you are connected back to everything and everything around you at once. You feel your sense of oneness now in a room. Try to communicate now. You have to disconnect.
Well, it's almost imperceptible, but you...
That is so minute.
Takes place.
And yet it is happening in us. And through the meditation, this is what makes us realize now that love is not to be in love or to be loved or to crave love. Love is this connecting link, this minute principle that holds us together, that you can now feel yourself. And as you feel yourself one with it, now when you try to communicate, you do not step away from the oneness of it. You see, before you try to communicate, you have to disconnect yourself to communicate. But in the pure love, there is no disconnection to communicate to no one. The love is. You see? It's going to the thing.
Mentioning something earlier in the evening about having my brain's kind of fuzzy right now about the
mallet here.
Huh?
Yeah, that mallet here.
What was that?
You have to see the picture.
Kate has colored it and it looks marvelous. The one that she colored for me. It looks beautiful in color, the pink pig. And a nice llama, you know, he's all dressed up in his and he's sitting down there. And I tell you that, whacking his head and he's whining out. It is interesting to see. because it describes many things about us in meditation, what we are actually doing in meditation. The fellow who wrote it had to experience meditation, or the thing that went through in meditation. I'll tell you a little story. There's a friend of mine. She's studied with Paramahansa Yogananda. And after the master passed away, she came out from the ashram to live outside on her own. She was fairly developed. And she wanted to attend a Zen Buddhist meditation. Well, she went to the meditation that night with her daughter. And they're all sitting down meditating. And the master walks around. And he has, all of a sudden, he takes his fist and gives a whack on the head and tell her to get up. That was the end of the meditation.
I don't think so.
That was the end of the meditation. She said to me, "Abana, I saw stars, planets, lights and colors, everything." She said, "Well, have you gone back?" She said, "Oh, not for that type of meditation." But my daughter today said, "Well, this is what you were asking for. You were asking to see the inner lights." And where are the inner lights? Out of tissue and bone is congealed energy, light, and it's not going to release itself except by a shock. Now, tremendous concentration takes a while for this thing to give up its electrical vibration. Yet if you put your fingers over the eyes like this, you begin to see the entire infinity, the whole universe, like if you went to 2001 to see the picture. The whole thing is right there. But this takes pressure. Now she wasn't willing to do all that, so he took his fist and he gave her a whack in her head. And she saw it, and he said, "That's this." She was the end of our meditation. The thing is, the meditation is trying to make you watch inside and collect these energies to the central part of your being in order for your mind to be clear-visioned. Seer, you know, the clairvoyant.
Can you force that through will, though? I mean,
there is no forcing, there is no will. This is strictly, we call it,
but there, spending the time. Concentrated.
Yeah. You know, thinking is one of the hardest things, to think, to feel and watch. This is vigil. It's a vigil to stay there and watch for a long time to see us in a light. And now don't count it in terms of overnight activity, because this thing can take months, years. This is a growing thing, because the tissues, they're alive, they're growing. So it takes a while for it to get up. But then, all during that period, there's a sense of joy. This is the important thing. Now you can see all the lights and hear all the wondrous songs. But if you don't have this joy, you have nothing. They cannot take away the joy from inside, you know. Now, Master used to say, if heaven's a place where we are going to go to be joyful, and you never experience one bit of it in the physical body while you're on this earth, so what good did God give you a body for? What did you want to ask for a body? If you don't, you can't experience it here, and you were in the realm of joy, We are joy, you know. The angels are supposed to be joyful, and yet they are envious of you if you got a body. So is their joy real to them? Are they really experiencing the joy that they're talking about? The joy you're talking about is the fact that you can feel it in these tissues. That it can come out and be you can consciously experience a flow of this light. To be conscious of this thing. Now, unconscious joy is sleep. Nobody need to argue about one. We all have that every day. the scientist says, what portion of our life we sleep it away? A great portion of it. That's unconscious joy. Now, in the spiritual life, that's joy, but still, you got no way to be conscious of it, to say that it's there inside. So when you're in the physical body, this joy is here in meditation, which is intuitive, and that's it's in the spiritual realm or cosmic realm. Yet, the greater joy is this. When the eyes open, action, the greater joy is here still. The active life is the greater joy. This is why they say Brahma, the creator, creates, Vishnu, the preserver, maintains. But the creator's joy is great. The preserver's joy is greater. But the greatest joy is the renovator, the remodeler. The person who is tearing down and building up with a new expression, he's getting greater joy. He's getting the greatest joy. The greatest joy is always to set up something fresh, to reactivate it.
You're getting into the
Into the what?
You're getting into debatable ground now.
Debatable ground?
Yeah. This begins to smack of that returned sun, and I've always still had a feeling that the boy that stayed home and took care of things was just as deserving as the one that went out and lived wild and came back and was accepted. And I hadn't quite been able to tell that yet.
Well, you see, that is a symbolism that the Master Jesus used, you see, the prodigal son. There are two lights in us. There is a wayward light that moves out through the five senses through either. And there is a stable light that stays within us called Pingala. It doesn't go nowhere. Either pulls all the time. Now, therefore it goes down into what our basic nature, down in the pigsty. It grovels in the pigsty. It becomes degenerate, it discharges. So it's like a prodigal child. That's why they call it prodigal. The pull of the one light going this way. When that light reaches a point of total discharge, not complete, though, total, that light sees it's too weak now because it's drained out. It's depending on the midbrain or the solar plexus to activate phenomena, to participate in phenomena to survive. Therefore, it comes to its senses. It comes to its senses. This is what he says. He came back to his senses. He came back to himself. It returns back here now, trying to find out why. Discontent has crept in. Disillusion has crept in. So it tries to go back. No. But on the return up now, the moment this sense of disillusion, this sense of recrimination, sense of making amends, a remodification begins in the human being, intuition starts moving forward, not reason. It's the strangest thing. Reason don't come back moving down to the person who wants to make amends. Intuition. Devotional love starts moving out to the person who wants to make amends. Why? reason would interfere and prevent him from being humble. A person who wants to make amends starts to be humble. His nature becomes humble. He's trying to be honest with himself for the first time, and reason has no place there now. Reason would only destroy anything, and reason is finger-luck coming back again, because the other one says to himself, why should I give up my... why should this coin now start taking and pushing back this side now? Why does this other one got to come back in? Why did not intuition come down and help me here? And give me a chance to go further in, get past this 1,000-petal lotus. It doesn't. It moves forward when idle starts pulling back. When the degenerative energy starts pulling back, the disillusion starts remaking itself or making amends itself. The intuition starts coming down and reaching it out and encouraging it back. This is what we call the regenerative life. It begins to pull back now. It gives it encouragement. It meets it halfway. The intuitive nature becomes... It pulls it back for the first time.
Is that...
Yeah, it is what you call going through RAM. This is exactly another... You're going through the resistance, the adjustment, the mutations of consciousness, and the molding of patterns of consciousness, and eventually you go through what is called saturation, lag, and then, or night of the soul, and then recurrence, that is, a new expansion of mind and soul, and force, and you make it.
And you always expand a little more?
Every time. You never go backwards in this process because it's there, you see. Now, masters have pointed out that you can use mantras or gurus and some the holy names or the holy prophets. They are the ones can help you to go inside further in. That's why you should be able to meditate and call upon these holy ones to help you move inside. Now, don't think for one moment they say move inside, you're going to fly away out of your mechanism and go flying all over the joint. Moving inside also is, again, a process of clearing up in the mind ideas of behavior and understanding how this behavior can now transfer itself to outward action. Most of us have go into ourselves, we make decisions within ourselves, but we don't take it out into outward action. We don't see the peace in the outward action. There is no peace. So what have we got? Now, if the peace that passes all understanding is the thing that most the saints seem to bestow upon us, and when you meet the saint, what has he got to bestow? Does he bestow miracles? He's praying all the time. Well, if he's praying, he may be repeating a mantra, or the name of God, or he may be immersed in the beatific feeling.
Sorry, I must have busted your cord here.
It's this inner refinement that is occurring inside of you. You see.
Sadhana, you spoke of the master, the name of the master helping you in meditation to come through or to understand. Is this actually something that is coming from the master? Is he in some way personally conscious of this falling upon him? One of the chelas, or is it just a natural force that you have?
No, you have a living master.
I'm assuming this is a master who no, what? You're not conscious of eating.
You see, the living master is one you have that you know is living in the body. That is working from the realm of matter to matter, because you are matter. And Babaji is a living master. He's working from that realm to you in your meditative practices. Yukteswar and all these men have reached the resurrected body, but then you're going to always be in doubt as to where you stand in worthiness of a resurrected body to your physical body. Now, in terms of the human body, that's why the expression, the need of a living master, because form. But Babaji is in this form, Charan Singh and all these men, they're in the living form. They are linking you through the meditative process to the levels of consciousness within yourself. They are involved in this as a physical thing. Now, whenever you meet them, you know then they show you themselves that they can take you to this level. They pull you to this level because they are still in the physical form, see? Now, John had to do this for Jesus. Jesus knew this as a reality. So, when you meditate, the name of the master is a link. Now, let me show you another way of saying it. All right, you have a TV set in the room. There are so many channels to which you can turn to. You have to pre-select what channel you want to tune in on. And the program is coming, and it's been picked up because of previous association. You may not know what program is on tonight, but you're playing just that particular channel. In the case of the living masters...
Sorry to cut this off, folks, but this will be continued on the other side. If you will turn the tape over, I think I'm going to backtrack just a few words to give you the connection.